Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. The time is 2 minutes after nine, first late meeting this year. January 25th, 2023. With me today is Senator Hoffman, Senator Wilson, Senator Merrick, Senator Keel, and we'll be joined by the other two senators here shortly. On the agenda today, we're going to talk with the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. We have the CEO, Mr. Steve Williams, here today. He can come forward, jump in the middle seat. And I see there's the board chairman, Anita Halterman. In case he needs a lifeline, try not to get you in trouble with the board when we ask you the questions. If you can introduce yourself for the record, maybe give the public just kind of a brief history of how long you've been the CEO and kind of your background, and same with the board chair when she introduces herself so the public has a little bit better background, and then we'll start the presentation.
Thank you, Senator. Happy to be here this morning to brief the committee on the work of the trust and what we're looking forward to doing in terms of partnership with the administration, the legislature, and obviously the community members that serve our beneficiaries. For the record, I am Steve Williams. I'm the CEO for the Alaska Mental Health Trust. I've worked for the trust for about 17 years, and I've held this position just over a year today. So last year when I was presenting to the committee was pretty early on in my in this seat. So it's good to see you all again. And Anita Halterman is the chair of the Board of Trustees, and if I can let her introduce herself.
That would be nice.
Thank you. I'm Anita Halterman, and I have been with the board approximately 4 years now in a variety of different roles. I recently took over as chair last year, about the time Steve came on as CEO. I assumed the role of the chair of the board. We do appreciate the opportunity to present to the committee today. The trust has a unique place in state government. We are a funder, but we also can apply our resources to a catalytic fashion to help improve Alaska's system of care. We do this by supporting partners and bringing on new lines of service, by supporting capacity building, working on workforce development issues and capital projects, and through policy and planning activities. And as we will share during the upcoming slides, we do that prudently and carefully with managed trust resources. Lastly, before I dive in, I'll acknowledge that we are aware that for many of our trust beneficiaries, our system is not meeting their needs. We know that there are wait lists and increasing costs and other challenges, but we are proud of the work that we do, and we are very engaged with state, local, tribal, nonprofit, and provider partners to support meaningful change and a robust continuum of services and support for vulnerable Alaskans. So with that, I'll move into our PowerPoint presentation. I'd like to introduce the rest of my board. I am serving as the chair this year. Rhonda Boyles is serving. Oh, I'm sorry.
Just a second. When the board chairman introduces the board members, if you could put your hand up a little bit. I know you're in the front row, so those at home that are watching will put a face with a name. That would be appreciated.
Thank you, sir.
Or stand up, whatever you guys want to do.
Rhonda Boyles. Rhonda is our vice chair. Brent Fisher is absent this morning. He is here in the Capitol, but had another commitment. Vernay Warner is currently our Program and Planning Committee Chair. She is also online. She is not present in the room today. John Sturgeon. John is our Resource Management Committee Chair. We are very blessed to have John in that role. Kevin Feynman. Kevin is our Audit and Risk Committee Chair, and Agnes Moran is a relatively new trustee. She will be taking the role of Program and Planning Committee Chair in the near future as we transition our trustees. So Brent currently serves as our Secretary and our Finance Committee Chair. So the Board of Trustees is an independent board. We provide governance and fiduciary oversight and direction to achieving the mission of the trust. Trustees are appointed by the governor and must be confirmed by the legislature. We anticipate the legislature will be considering appointments for two of our seven trustees this year. This slide shows our trust beneficiaries. These are our beneficiary groups. We recognize that many of our beneficiaries fall into more than one of these groups. So we serve people with mental illnesses, intellectual developmental disabilities, Alzheimer's disease, related dementia, traumatic brain injuries, and substance use disorders. We support both youth and adult beneficiaries to prioritize individuals whose behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities place them at risk of institutionalization if they do not have the proper community supports. We also consider prevention of these conditions where it's possible to be a part of our mandate. So the mission of the trust, it is the duty of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority to provide leadership in the advocacy, planning, implementing, and funding of services and programs for trust beneficiaries. As we like to say, it is our duty at the trust to lead these efforts and our programs for our trust beneficiaries. Working closely with the state, we supported at the time, in 2019, the DHSS development of a 5-year comprehensive mental health plan. We also continuously work to manage our assets, preserve and grow the trust's corpus, because when we plan to manage trust resources, we do it with an eye on perpetuity. We know that our beneficiaries have needs now, but we anticipate that they will continue to have needs into the future, and we must be able to continue to support those needs. So with that, I'm going to turn the presentation over to Mr. Steve Williams.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Halterman. For the record, again, Steve Williams, CEO for the Trust. Before we get into the overall financial picture of the Trust, as well as the programs and the recommendations that the trustees made to the administration and the legislature regarding the use of state general funds, I'd like just to kind of hit on real quick a status update on the 2021 legislative audit that was requested of the Trust. As committee members might remember, this was a follow-up to an audit that was done in 2018. At the time, there was interest and question as to whether or not the trust use of funding for the purchase of seven commercial real estate properties was appropriate. We followed through with the recommendations that were outlined in 2018. And then in 2021, there was a follow-up, a check-in to see the status on those recommendations. And then most recently, we were requested by the legislative auditor, in addition to other agencies, for a status update on the 2021 audit. There were five recommendations in that audit, and the status report we provided to the legislative auditor, Ms. Curtis, in November was then presented along with the other responses from other agencies at a December Legislative Budget and Audit Committee meeting. And the legislative auditor was recommended that there need not be any actions at this time, which we're appreciative that our actions and the way we communicated those actions to the auditor were demonstrated our the level of importance that we have in those recommendations and our ability to address them and improve our operations overall. So I'm going to move on to the next slide. The next slide is, this committee should be somewhat familiar with this slide. We've used this historically in our presentations to demonstrate our financial position of the total invested assets of the trust. And this graph represents all the way up to year end 2022. So I'd like to focus maybe on the far right of this chart, and the green section of the bar represents the corpus of the trust that is managed by the Alaska Permanent Fund. And that green bar represents around $531 million. The bar immediately above that, the light blue bar, represents the budget reserves totaling around $204 million. And then the darker, smaller section of the bar in that in that bar is our the equity of the commercial real estate assets, which is roughly $73 million. So in total, that's around $801 million of total invested assets of the trust. You'll notice that there's a slight dip there from 2021, and I think it's not lost on this committee that that's reflective of the turbulent financial times that we've experienced. Obviously, 2021 was strong for all of us, and we've seen a sea change. We're hoping that that won't continue, and things will level back out, and we'll see the growth as we've seen over several years here at the Trust. I'll pause there to see if there's any questions before I move on to the next slide.
There is. So we'll just for the as a reminder, we'll go through the through the slide, and then if there's a question by the committeeman, I'll have you pause and we'll take questions, and the committeeman will flag me if they have a question in their secret hand signals that they do.
Senator Hoffman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Of the $204 million that are in the reserves, can you remind the committee what the $71 million of restricted reserves are for?
That is a designation of the way our reserves in total are split out. So some of them are restricted, some of them are unrestricted. These are invested with the Alaska Permanent Fund. And this is the formula that was part of what we had to review back in the 20 in the audit to determine to make sure that we were allocating and accounting for our reserves in the proper way.
So what are the reserves earmarked for them?
The reserves are used, and I can get into this a little bit later. The board sets a target of 400% of budget reserves of our spending so that in the event that there's a significant downturn in the market and our returns, that we have funding available to be able to maintain our grant making and our operations through that dip and hopefully ride it out so that the market turns and we don't have to make any reductions to the grant programs or the organizations that we support.
So you're going to touch on this in more detail later.
Okay.
Because I did have a meeting with Mr. Williams yesterday and asked him to make sure that he takes the time in his presentation to talk about their portfolio and their ability to handle dips and the impact of the market the last few years on it with their smoothing mechanism that they use. Thank you. Go ahead and continue.
And actually, Mr. Chair and Senator Hoffman, this might actually be a good place to talk a little bit about that as well. So this slide here represents on the left the total estimated available funding for FY24 for the trust. And the way we calculate our available our estimated available funding is through what I will call four different revenue streams. The top is the corpus that's invested in the permanent fund. The second row down is the funding that from prior year grants that either weren't fully expended or didn't get expended for a variety of reasons. The third row down is spendable income that's generated from the trust land office that I'll talk about later in the presentation. And then that last row, that smallest row, is the money interest earned on Jafonzi accounts, very low interest bearing accounts that have our checking account and whatnot that we use to then make our grants. So those are the four revenue streams. And what we do is we look at the previous 4 years in each of those rows of the earnings or the grants that didn't expended, the money that's generated from the TLO, and we average those 4 years, and we use that calculation to then determine what the projected upcoming fiscal year available spending is. And so in that first row, that 4.25%, is we look at the earnings of the corpus over 4 years, we take that average, and then we take 4.25%, and that's the draw off of the earnings. And we do this because we want to make sure, as I was mentioning on the previous slide, that we have the ability to mitigate the highs and the lows of the market, the highs and the lows of periods of time when the trust land office is generating revenue, as well as our grant making. So as the chair used the term smoothing, that is the intent behind this approach, is to be able to smooth out any volatility so that it has the minimal impact on the organizations and the beneficiaries that we serve. On the right-hand side of the dark blue chart is a lighter blue chart, and that just shows you what the available funding has been each fiscal year since FY19. You can see that by and large, we are able to grow the available funding around $1 to $2 million per fiscal year. You'll note that between FY, or what we're at this point in time looking at for FY23 is a modest growth of a few hundred thousand dollars because of where we are in the current market.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Williams, the prior year funds carry forward is about how much? Well, it's about a little bit more than 10% of the grants that were allocated. Is there a reason that about 10% of the grants weren't funded? Can you go a little bit more detail upon that in terms of the carry year forward and what those grants were for? Were they a large grant, or I'm just concerned because that seems like a large amount of carry forward funds from last year to this year?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I'll give you some just sort of general, I don't have specifics in terms of specific grants, the amounts, but here are the reasons why there's lapse in grant funding or trust funding. There were programs that were intended to start at the beginning of the fiscal year that may have been delayed for a variety of reasons. Workforce, you know, the program wasn't really ready to get up on step. And so that delay, if they missed a quarter, that quarter of funding didn't get expended, and then there's a little piece there. Some projects that we thought were going to get started didn't start at all. Some of it, when we work with our state agencies, they might not fully expend the trust funds that for the projects that we work with them on in a given fiscal year. And so the 10% is not a percentage. We try and keep it below 10%, but there we know that on any given fiscal year, there is going to be a lapse of funds that don't get fully expended as we had hoped.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Williams, can you explain land office spendable income? Is that everything the land office generates, or is that a slice of it?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, the land office generates revenue to start with. The purpose of the land office is to maximize revenue off of trust lands for the benefit of the beneficiaries and the trust. And so when they generate revenue for the trust, it gets broken out into two different categories, and this is by statute and regulation. Some of the revenue that they generate off their land, off our lands, are spendable income. They don't go into the corpus or the principal. Some of the revenue that is generated from the land office off of our lands has to be designated and deposited into the corpus of the trust, and that's outlined in statute. So, for example, I'll use timber as a resource. 85% of the revenue generated from timber activity on trust lands goes into the principal of the trust. And then 15% of that is distributed to the trust as spendable income that can be, that works into the average that you're seeing there on row three, or the third row down.
Okay, go ahead and continue.
So how does that spending that's estimated and projected get put into play in FY24? This pie chart will show you how that breaks out. I'll start at the top and work my way around the pie. The first two slices of the pie at the top, the green and the blue, those are our agency budgets. The Trust Authority Office, where I and 16 of my staff sit and work, that is the office that really focuses on the programs, the services, the grant making, the policy work that we do. There are 17 FTEs in my office, at the Trust Authority Office. The Trust Land Office is operated within the Department of Natural Resources, separate from the Trust Authority Office, which is in revenue. And there are 19 FTEs in that office. And their task, as I mentioned, is to maximize revenue off the trust lands for the purposes of the trust. But it's also to ensure and monitor and develop the lands so that the lands maintain value and we have opportunities to generate the revenue off those lands. So we can't just let land sit and then one day go to it and say, well, let's do this, only to find that there might be something that's happened to that land that was out of our, that we weren't aware of. So there's an important function of the Trust Land Office in that regard. The yellow slice of the pie, MTAR, The committee will recognize that wonderful acronym, Mental Health Trust Authority Authorized Receipts. When you're looking at the state budget, that is the code or the acronym that conveys that the funds that are associated are trust funds, funds approved by the trustees for a specific purpose within a state department and a state agency. From the legislative point of view or perspective, what this means is the legislature provides the receipt authority for that agency and division to be able to use the trust funds as approved by our trustees. And you can see that in FY24, we're looking at about $9.8 million going to a variety of state agencies. And then when you look to the half slice of the other piece of the pie, authority grants. These are grant fund trust funds that go out to community agencies, tribal governments, local governments that are outside of the state budget process. The trust has the authority to make grants directly to organizations, and we do that. And this $19.7 million demonstrates how we do that. I'd like to note that little asterisk at the bottom, which the $19 million includes $1.9 million in mini grants. Those are funds that go directly to beneficiaries for a variety of reasons. Trust beneficiaries can, through an agency, can apply for a mini grant up to $2,500 for a variety of purposes. We have mini grants that go out to individuals with mental health and addiction-related issues, mini grants for our populations that experience Alzheimer's, dementia, and other related disorders, and then mini grants for those who might experience an intellectual or developmental disability. So this gives you the sense of how that previous slide that showed the total available funding breaks out in these various categories.
Okay, and then we're going to try to stay away from acronyms as much as possible so those at home could watch. So when you were talking about FTEs, I think you're not talking about robots. What is that?
That is a full-time equivalent position. That is a person at our office.
Right, your workforce.
Workforce, thank you.
Okay.
So I won't spend a lot of time on this slide, but as I showed you on the previous slide there, in FY24, there's about $9.8 million approved by the trustees going through state agencies and departments. This breaks it down to the agencies and the totals that are going to the agencies or in FY24. So there's 11 different agencies listed here. The Department of Health and the Department of Family and Community Services, and when you combine them, there's about $4 million that has been approved by the trustees for various programs and services within those departments. We also have increments that are going to the court system as well as to the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Every year, by statute, our Board of Trustees has to make recommendations to the administration and the legislature for how the state could be spending state general fund dollars. We submit a letter with the approved budget by September 15th. And what you see here on this table is a comparison of what the trustees approved for state general fund dollars and what was included in the governor's proposed budget that was released in December. The blue columns are what the trustees recommended. The yellow columns are what were included in the proposed budget. The top portion is operating. The bottom portion is capital budgets, and these are included in the mental health budget bill. And what you'll see is that the governor did include several recommendations from the trustees for state general funding. He did not include all of them, and I would note that, and this committee is probably aware of this, that's not uncommon. We've seen this before where different administrations have priorities and some things get included, some things don't. There's the fiscal realities of the state that I'm sure play a part of this. But for us, these are the priorities in terms of our activities and our partnerships with organizations and the state to ensure that there are services and programs out in the community. I would note that, and I'm going to speak a little bit more about Crisis Now briefly at the end of the presentation, but In the middle of the top column, you'll see there are two rows labeled Crisis Now Continuum of Care Grants, $1 million in one row and $500,000 in another that were not included. Those are pretty critical for our continued momentum and implementation of the Crisis Now efforts statewide. And then the other one that I would just note, because Chair Halterman mentioned it in her opening remarks, the Comprehensive Integrated Mental Health Program Plan, which is a plan by statute that the department develops in partnership with the trust and others every 5 years. It's coming up on its next five-year renewal. And that increment in the second row for the position is critical for us to be able to have a point of contact with the department for developing and updating that plan. It's also integral for the department so that the divisions and the agencies within the department understand and have a conduit to the information in that plan.
Okay, so on that slide before we go to the next one, I think we'll wait until the administration gives us the supplemental budget and the amendments that are coming next week or so, and we'll look for changes within the mental health budget and then the changes that are still there. The difference is I'll meet with mental health trust authority on that and the OMB for the Office of Management budget for the governor, and we'll have those discussions and see if we can understand further what concerns are on the recommendations and see if we can't work something out. But the one of the ones that stick out a little bit is the Alaska Housing Assistance Program. We have been interested in starting to concentrate on the housing shortage and capacity issues we have here at the table. So although the capital budget chairman is not at the table right now, I'm sure he'll take an interest in this and have some conversations with the administration along with Alaska Mental Health to see if we can't further increase housing availability. We have problems throughout the state, particularly in rural Alaska. So just as a heads up, there's a few things that stick out. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Williams, I have a question on their peer support certification, Department of Health line item. Is that for more of like substance abuse peer support? And if so, I don't believe there's a requirement for peer support to be certified. Are you guys requesting legislation for that as well, or just offering it just for people who may just want to have it?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, the peer support certification increment that you see it in that slide is there was a certification program that was developed by the department in conjunction with the trust so that we could use people with lived experience in the delivery of services in our system of care. And I will have to get back to you on whether or not there's a requirement that they be certified. I would imagine that if there is a requirement, that it would may relate to how the agencies could generate revenue from individuals with peer support certification. I would also just add that it allows for individuals that it's an entry point and a pathway for increased employment opportunities for individuals who have lived experiences within our workforce. And a final note, just in terms of Crisis Now, peer support is a key component of the delivery of services at all the levels within that continuum of care in that model. So having the certification, having peers engaged who can relate to someone who's in a period that they need help, is critical for success for the programs, but more importantly for the individuals needing care.
Right. If I could follow up. Yeah, and I'm not saying that I believe I support the peer support certification. I just didn't know if it was, I didn't believe it was required by agencies to be peer, to have the certification as a part of a reimbursable system through our different billable systems that we have for revenue generation, as you mentioned. And I just would like to just make sure that we do have qualified folks that have additional certification, as it is a pathway to becoming a CDC or a chemical dependency counselor or moving on through the agency. So I just wanted to get that clarification, if we could get that answer, Mr. Chair.
You have a comment,
Through the chair to Senator Wilson, I will follow up with the committee in writing and to answer that question.
Any other questions on this slide? Maybe before we jump into some of the other slides, one thing we haven't mentioned dealing with the budgets and the physical position of the of mental health is a couple of years ago, we had some concern and discussion on inflation-proofing the trust and transferring funds, you know, into the inflation-proofing or with the inflation-proofing mechanism. Could you remind the committee and the public how we are now dealing with that?
To the chair, yes. So in terms of inflation-proofing and protecting the purchasing power of the trust for future beneficiaries, which the trust has to be very cognizant of, it's not just about the here and now, it is future beneficiaries. The most recently, we can transfer income into the principal of the trust as a mechanism for doing that. We've done that recently in the last couple of years to the tune of about $76 million. But the other way that we protect the purchasing power of the trust and its funds is through the mechanisms that I described when I went back to that slide of how we calculate our available spending, which is to make sure we don't overdraw, that we're using the average of the 4 years of previous 4 years of earnings in that four and a quarter percent draw of revenue from there. And then the other three rows that were listed on that table, and I can flip back if you'd like me to. Okay. As a way of protecting the purchasing power and inflation proofing the trust. We had actually, we contracted with Cowen this past spring to look at how, what our inflation proofing mechanisms were, and they concurred with the approach that the board is using for protecting and inflation proofing the corpus.
So this is now taking place on a more routine basis than it was several years ago.
Yes.
The fund transfer into the corpus.
And to the chair, one additional piece of information related that to that transfer is I mentioned a 400% target for budget reserves. So when we have to exceed that target, and then the trustees have the option of taking whatever that amount is above the 400% and determining whether they want to transfer that over to the corpus of the trust for inflation proofing, whether there's some critical program in the community that they want to use those funds for programs, or if there's something going on related to the trust land office. So it's that 400%, it's the revenue over that 400% that then triggers the conversation with the Board of Trustees as to how to deploy that funding.
Senator Bishop has joined us. So help me understand why you're so protective of not overdrawing the fund and holding it at 4.5%, or excuse me, 4.25%, why we can't just extract what we want for any given issue of the day.
To the chair, I mentioned the role of the trust and beneficiaries, and the key piece to that is beneficiaries today, beneficiaries in the future, perpetuity. So we have to maintain our funding and the purchasing power to maintain equity between the beneficiaries of today and the beneficiaries in the future, and that is the driver.
So it's critical in your mission not to overdraw the trust.
To the chair, yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next slide. And I think it would be nice when you do the presentation in the other body, there's a lot of new members, to take a little bit of time and ensure that they understand why 4%, 4.25% is there, and why it's not 8% or 9% or 10%, and why there's such a concern that the emergency today might, if you ignored that, might put you in a position where you can't respond to the emergency tomorrow.
Thank you for that recommendation, Mr. Chair, and we'll work that in. And I would just also add that when Callan did our review in last spring, they looked at that 4.25% and concurred that that was the appropriate percentage to maintain the equity and purchasing power for the future.
Okay, thank you.
So this next slide, and while I pull out some things to show you all, this next slide just is a high-level demonstration of grant impacts for FY22. I'm holding up the annual trust annual report, And there's an investment report that is also included that was distributed to all the legislative offices. So hopefully you guys have received those, but if not, look for them. And the investment report will demonstrate each grant that was awarded in FY22 by the trust to the entity for the purpose and the amount. So this slide up here just shows you a high level of the types of grants, the categories of grants that we generally make, the number of grants that were in those categories, and then the total amount of funds approved for those different projects and purposes.
Senator Bishop would like to ask about workforce development. I can see it in his twitches. Could you help us with that, what you were doing there?
What are we doing with workforce development and training?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, the trust is engaged in several different areas related to workforce development. Senator Wilson raised a question earlier around peer support certification. That's one area that we are engaged in building up the workforce for our providers of services out in the communities. We've also, I think the committee is aware of our work over the last several years with the SHARP program, which is a loan repayment program that has generated hundreds of jobs over the course of those years, including nurses, behavioral health clinicians, behavioral health aides, so on and so forth. And those that program has been tapped into by the Department of Corrections, by API. OCS is now tapping into it, as well as our community partners, YKHC, Norton Sound. Those are huge organizations that are using that resource to draw in critical positions and then being able to maintain those positions in the communities once the program is up and running. So that those are a couple of examples of our work in that area.
Just a quick follow-up, yep. Mr. Chairman. What does Alzheimer patients, do they fall under your purview? Because I see there's a real need to expand training in the area and help in the area of care for Alzheimer patients. You know, it seems like we're behind the curve, if you will, on providing that supports in the community. So do you have anything you would like to say in that area on workforce development?
Through the chair to Senator Bishop, adults experiencing Alzheimer's and dementia or other related disorders are beneficiaries of the trust. And we do our work in to address workforce issues and solutions in partnership with one of our statutory advisory boards, which is the Alaska Commission on Aging. And so I could go back and provide to the committee, look at our grant making over time and see if there are specific targeted workforce issues related to that population and provide that to the committee.
If the chair approves, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick clarification on the utilization of state programs using SHARP. Are they using SHARP 1, 2, or 3? And feel free to get back to the committee.
Through the chair to Senator Wilson, I will provide that to the committee. I don't want to misspeak.
Okay. And for those watching at home, could you kind of restate the subject matter of the question? Because, again, there are some secret language used that a lot of people don't understand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. SHARP stands for the Student Health Loan Repayment Program.
Okay. Student Health Loan Repayment Program was the question.
And through the chair to Senator Wilson, I'll help you out a little bit too, because you mentioned three different programs. Over the course of several years, the SHARP program has gone through evolutions of improvement and different programs related to that, those workforce issues. And we will provide all that detail to the committee.
Okay, thank you. And then we'll distribute it. Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to number 12.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when staff present recommended budget recommendations to our Board of Trustees, that $37 million that we referenced several slides ago, we have been directed by the trustees, and we do this in a very sort of targeted fashion. This committee should be familiar with our focus areas. They're listed at the top. Those are the standing focus areas that we've had since around 2006. The strategies and the goals within those focus areas have changed over time, but those are umbrella issues that impact our beneficiaries that require a long-term and constant improvement, which is, just as a side note, which is one of the values of the trust. Value of the trust to the state is to be able to use our funds to help the system continue to evolve over time so that we don't remain stagnant and flat and don't change and improve either in terms of quality of service or in effectiveness and efficiencies. So those umbrella bullets under the focus areas are exactly that, umbrellas. And then we look at issues in each of those areas. And then the additional priorities, workforce development, and then also just our work in early intervention and prevention so that we can identify beneficiaries early on to try and get them the care that they need, so as they go through life, those disorders don't increase and start to require higher level, more intensive levels of care that could pull them out of their communities or away from family and friends. In addition to those focus areas and other priorities, the trust is engaged in policy and advocacy work, and we do this in partnership with our four statutory advisors. I mentioned the Alaska Commission on Aging earlier. The Alaska Mental Health Board and the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse are other statutory advisory boards, as well as the Governor's Council on Special Education and Disabilities. And these are broad areas, but these are critical to the system and the way that the system provides services to our beneficiaries and their families across the state. Community-based services, you've heard me mention before that having access at the lowest level of care to the family as close to their home as possible is the most effective and, frankly, the most cost-effective way of reaching the needs of those families and our beneficiaries. Workforce development, we've already touched on, but I'll just mention again, critical to our organizations, and we know across, it's not just healthcare that is struggling with workforce right now, it's all sectors. But I would mention that healthcare is one of the largest economic drivers for our state when you look at that sector. Medicaid is, for our beneficiaries, are largely insured through the Medicaid program. Our organizations that provide services use that program to bill for the services they provide, ensuring that the rates are commensurate with the cost of actually delivering that care, but then also maintain their relevance to inflation over time so that these organizations don't, over time, essentially receive reductions in funding because rates haven't been adjusted either for the cost of the service or for to keep up with the rate of inflation. Incredibly important. And then that last bullet's related to our work with the departments and others out in the community on the crisis now system of care.
I have a question, Senator Wilson. Okay, next slide, please.
So I've mentioned crisis now a few times. This is a timeline that I'm not going to walk through it, but this is a timeline for the committee to see when we started our work with the department, then Health and Social Services, now Health and Family and Community Services, as well as our tribal partners and our community partners to transform how we respond to a person in a behavioral health crisis. You can see it started in 2018. The committee might remember back in 2018, 2019, there was a lawsuit against the state that really was the energy behind the department and the trust looking at how do we just transform the system? This is the opportunity to transform our system. And you can see what's happened since 2018 and the accomplishments that have been made since then. This next slide shows you how we're doing this work in the communities that we are doing it. I want to thank the members for their support last session related to House Bill 172. That was absolutely a strong underpinning and required underpinning for this model to be successful so that individuals voluntarily or involuntarily could receive access to the care that they need. Our focus has been on Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the Matsu Valley, but you can see on this map that we are working now with other communities, including folks out in Manelik, out in Kotzebue, Copper Center and Unalaska, Juneau and Ketchikan as well.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Williams, this last year, the legislature, through the capital budget, I believe, gave $8 million to Providence and to help with the crisis now to build a, to remodel the old API into a stabilization center, I believe. Since then, they've switched CEO and then sort of merged their accounting office and rumored not to be able to have the full funds, nor do they want to commit additional funds and may have to scrap that project. Have you have any concerns about the project continuing as tracked, or do we need to look at ways to reallocate that money to other facilities statewide that may be ready to operate a crisis stabilization center?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, we've had conversations right away after that transition happened and Lagos became was named the new CEO. The trust does not have any concerns that that project isn't going to continue to move forward. We work closely with them. And for the record, the crisis stabilization center that the senator was referencing is currently was the old API building, is the old API building. It would provide not only crisis stabilization services, which is up to 24 hours, crisis residential services up to 7 days, and then they are incorporating into that model an urgent care component where anyone can walk in, access care immediately. If they need their meds refilled, they could get medications refilled there. So there's that's the model that they're using. And there have been no indications that there's any concern that this won't happen. In fact, we had a presentation by Providence at our January Program and Planning Committee on the current progress of that project. They requested additional funds to carry out, to continue the design for the development and construction of that project. And the trustees just yesterday approved roughly $1.5 million to Providence to continue the work on that project.
Okay. Follow-up?
I guess as a follow-up, no, Mr. Jowell.
Okay. Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Staying within my Senate District R, could you give me a little bit more information on who you're working with for providers in the Copper Valley?
Yes. Through the chair, Senator Bishop, if I can provide that list to you, I will. I don't have it off the top of my head.
Thank you.
Any other questions on this slide? I think this is okay. Next slide, please.
So one of our trust land office, which I mentioned early on in our presentation, Justy Warner, who is the executive director and is here in the room, oversees that office. She has 18 folks in her office that help to generate the revenue off of our lands for the trust. And what I'd like to highlight on this is the table on the right-hand side that shows you about seven or eight different rows there. Those are the asset classes of our trust land. So you can see that we generate revenue off of our lands in a variety of ways, whether it's mineral development, timber off of our lands, whether we lease lands or sell lands. Materials are gravel off of some of our lands that are used for construction of roads and other things. So that is the way that the Trust Land Office, some of the ways that the Trust Land Office generates the revenue. And you can see the revenue that is anticipated for FY23 that will be generating, totaling about $11.8 million for the trust. On the left-hand side of that table, you'll see some highlights. I'd like to highlight the land sales. Every fall, we do a land sale where individual Alaskans can place bids for identified parcels of land. And this year, the land sale generated $2.7 million of revenue. That was in the fall. We're not even through FY23. And I think that we will probably, based on that, we'll meet or exceed our goals for the upcoming for this fiscal year. Revenues from the land exchange and the parcels, we continue to have timber activity in Nocatee, Prince of Wales Island, and Shelter Cove, the timber that is the harvest and the timber that gets generated from there translates into income, not only for the trust or for the trust, but what I was also just going to add, just thinking about Senator Bishop and workforce, it's maintaining a workforce in an area of our state and for people in those communities. So that's a great thing. The third bullet, Icy Cape development, that is a parcel of land, trust-owned land down south of Yakutat, where we are looking at the possibility of generating revenue from minerals that might be on that parcel of land. We're in the sort of the investigation, working towards a pre-feasibility study of that parcel and whether that work could continue and generate revenue for the trust. And then the last bullet there, the easement program, is the Trust Land Office has started really looking at the utility easements, existing and potentially new easements, that we might be able to generate some revenue off of those easements as utilities get put in. I think with that, Mr. Chair, I'm finished.
Hey, but we're not done with this slide. Can't get to the slide you were looking for first. On Icy Cape, I think it's north of Yakutat, not correct? Icy Cape, yeah, it's just a misspeak, north of Yakutat. And then the earlier timber areas, Nocatee, and they're on Prince of Wales for those that are not familiar with the geography, and Shelter Cove is down at Ketchikan. Senator Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wondering if the Trust Land Office, you know, we've heard a lot of talk on the third floor about carbon sequestration. Has the Mental Health Trust also started looking at that for some of the lands that they use, since they actually have more of an active timber sales than General State of Alaska?
Through the chair to Senator Wilson, that is a topic of conversation that we're aware of, and the Trust Land Office is looking into how that might play into our work and our role of and our lands.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Williams, how many acres did you sell for the recover $2.7 million? And you can get back to the committee. My second question is that Icy Cape development that you referenced north of Yakutat, Senator, is that a placer deposit that they're looking at, placer gold deposit?
Through the chair to Senator Bishop, I'm going to acknowledge that a mining terminology is not my forte, but I believe when you describe placer, it's using water to wash out the minerals from the area. And the answer to that, if that is correct, the answer to that is yes.
Okay, thank you.
And we're talking about a visitation, hopefully sometime next summer, to that project. It has a substantial amount of mineralization and could be very lucrative for the trust going forward. It's very remote in Greenfield, so something that I think we'll probably take a look at next year when they're having some work done, the trust. So it is a promising area of revenue and jobs. Any other questions, Senator Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Williams, I guess, actually, it may be a question for the chair, Ms. Halterman. A question in terms of how much interest the board has in the land office's approach. And what I will say is the Mental Health Trust should be the most popular entity in the state, and in many places the Mental Health Trust is deeply disliked as a result, I think, of not so much the Trust Land Office's activities as their approach to those activities. Is that something that the board engages with at all?
I don't know how to answer that question. We are aware of conflicts with our resource development projects and feedback from the public. I don't know that our approach has always been as meaningful as it could be with regards to our land development. And we need to engage partners more frequently and in a meaningful way. We do the best we can. But we learn from the mistakes we make as we present development projects, and we do reflect on the feedback that we receive. So we are very engaged in our resource development. Without resource development, we wouldn't have the funds to generate to operate our programs. So we want those projects to go well, and we want those communities to be supportive of those projects. They create jobs for those local communities, and we need to ensure that it's the right fit when we do our projects, when we work on those resource development projects. Can you add anything to that, Steve?
Through the chair to Senator Keel, I would echo what Chair Halterman just said, but I would also just add that it has been my charge, one of the things that I've been doing since moving into the seat with Jesse Warner, the executive director of the TLO, is to really do some community outreach and education around the role of the trust and our resources and the money that gets generated and how it benefits communities and the individuals that live there. I think that by and large, the individuals don't know the trust and the complexity of it and the purpose and have the ability to necessarily understand the differences between state general lands and trust lands and how they're managed and the mission behind them.
And I would just add that we could do and we will do a better job of educating beneficiaries about the role of resource development for programs. I think at times there's a disconnect for our beneficiaries that don't understand that our land is different than a lot of the other resources that are developed in our state. So we, as a board and our CEO and the staff, are aware that we need to engage our beneficiaries as well to understand the connection between resource development. We've started those efforts. So as we moved forward on our Improving Lives conference, we had the Trust Land Office there meeting with our partners, nonprofits coming in and collecting information to make that connection between our land resources and the program funding that we do. So we are well aware that there is a disconnect, and we are working to improve that actively.
Senator, follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize if I came across as suggesting that the trust shouldn't develop the resources. That wasn't the intention. We see in many industries the concept of social license and other notions like goodwill expense. I think the key thing is when communities learn about a high-impact development, when the chainsaw starts, you've lost all opportunity to work with the community. And it's a 25-year, roughly, a history of that approach, a general bad neighbor approach. The trust has every opportunity to continue to do all the resource development it does without making enemies.
Point well made. Thank you, Senator, through the chair.
So before I get to your question, Senator Wilson, in my district, we have a lot of trust land. And I think the trust has responded well to the communities, trying to work through the issue of if it's a perceived visual impact, viewshed impact, particularly with the communities of Sitka and Ketchikan, to work through those issues with land exchanges and other things as we move forward, to develop and monetize the trust lands, which is your directive to maximize it if the neighbors appreciate it or not. And I recognize that sometimes that causes great concern to some folks, especially ones living up against trust land. But I think the trust, from what I've seen, has been responsive to the communities. And I think they've also gone in and harvested timber and then followed that up with subdivisions to increase our housing. So there's always ongoing conflict in particular timber harvests that the trust is pursuing as they're required to pursue. So anyway, I just want to let you know that the trust has been responsive. They're in a difficult position if you have tens of acres or hundreds of acres, and you've got to go in and develop that. There's limited amount of development you can do other than harvest timber if it's timberland. So anyway, Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, just wanted to echo some of your comments. And to thank the Mental Health Trust Authority. There was a dispute in my district about some gravel extraction, and they came out to the community councils and gave, you know, served the floor. And I think that, I don't want to call it conflict, but I think that thing, issue was handled responsively from the trust, and I think the community welcomed their input, and it was all settled pretty amicably. So just want to thank them for being responsive to that community need out there.
We had huge viewshed impacts potentially in Ketchikan that some people were concerned about, Deer Mountain, Sitka, Mount Verstovia, that the Russians logged two-thirds of the way up the hill, which is 1,800 feet or some number, 1,400 feet. And the Russians probably went up there 1,000 or 800. They went quite a ways up, maybe not 1,000, 700, 800 feet, whatever it is. So that was in the land exchange, and other timberlands were selected. So that, and it's very, very high volume because the Russians had cut it. It's very, very old second growth. Obviously the oldest, probably the oldest second growth around, because the Russians, it's been a while since ever they're building ships in Sitka. So anyway, we worked through that. It took years. The trust did not rush in and harvest that high value timber. They waited almost pushing a decade to get a land exchange to work that out with the communities, which they didn't have to do if push came to shove. So it is appreciated as we work through those. And I'm sure there's other areas of concern as we move along. There's one up in Haines in that area. There's Whale Pass is another area. There's several areas that you know, we have to work through those issues. Senator Wilson, did you have any other questions? I got one I'd like to just bring up. If you can get back to the committee on a little more detail, and it may be in the financial documents. I haven't looked at your report, but a little more detail on the real estate holdings of the subject of the audit several years ago, kind of what projects, what buildings are left. I'd like to know their cash flow positions, if there's a targeted holding period roughly. I know you don't want to be in a set date because you have to maximize that that asset. And we are looking forward to the time frame when those projects are gone and that historical book is closed and the assets are sitting, you know, where they are today and in the basically managed by the permanent fund. So if you could help the community or the committee with that, it would be appreciated. It's always a point of interest. It's not one that I think the public gets excited about, but it's one of those, you know, subjects that the finance committee likes to keep track of.
We'll provide that update, Mr. Chair, with the other responses.
Yep. We have any other questions, concerns? You have any final comments? I know you were looking for this slide number. Yes, it's slide number 17.
No, Mr. Chair, I just appreciate the committee's interest in the dialogue, and we look forward to our continued partnership and working with you to improve the system and the lives of our beneficiaries.
Okay. And thank you for coming in, and we look forward to having a review of the IC Cape project coming next year. You'll have a little better information in the with the assays that are being done and stuff, and possibly in that presentation you can highlight some of the bigger revenue potentials, job creation potentials that the trust has, along with all the service to the beneficiaries, because we want to see a healthy Alaska Mental Health Trust so we don't have to help you with general funds. We have enough help being requested other areas. With that, that concludes today's meeting. I do want to thank the board for coming. On the employees for watching. And I was just teasing. I know they're not robots. It was just an acronym that was used. So tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., we're going to put on the table Senate Bill 41, which is a capital budget that will be chaired by Senator Hoffman. I will not be here, but he's the capital budget chairman anyway. We'll see everybody tomorrow morning. You guys will see each other tomorrow morning. We are adjourned here now at 10:07 a.m. We are adjourned.